The Google Podcast app is going away in April. Right now, I want you to take a look at the podcast app you're using right now. Maybe it's time for a new one. Check out podcastapps.com and try a new one for free right now. That's podcastapps.com.
Hi, friends. It's Carrie Dahl. Thank you so much for venturing into the inner circle with me. If you subscribe to my podcast and have been listening for a while, thank you. I appreciate you. If you're new, welcome to my circle, where the power of story is honored and I believe all voices need and deserve to be heard. As a former news anchor turned podcast host and public speaking coach, I know that stories are the most powerful way we connect as human beings. I feel privileged so many of you trust me with your stories, whether in my private Inner Circle Facebook group or right here on my podcast. Your story is your gift. Thank you for allowing me to share it with the world. Friends, today we are going to dig into a topic that I love and I've been wanting to talk about for some time. It's mindset and the power that it has in your life. So I was thinking the other day that having control over our mind, and I mean total control, if that's possible, might be a superpower. I mean, think about it. Our thoughts control almost everything we do and everything we feel. Granted, our physical, mental, and emotional feelings play a huge factor in how we feel, but if we can use our mind to overpower those feelings, that's a huge win. You know, this concept keeps popping up in a variety of ways. And here's an example that I think speaks to the power of your mind. And I think some of you can relate to this. I have so much trouble meditating. I try so hard to shut my mind off to meditate, but it's so challenging to do. Literally within seconds, my mind is wandering to other things, and I spend more time bringing it back than actually meditating. Someone once told me that maybe that's meditation for me, to simply accept that I have a wandering mind and instead of fighting it, work with it. Perhaps they're right. I would like to be able to shut it off and I'm going to continue to work toward that and I won't give up on finding ways to make my practice happen because I believe that meditation and control of your mind can serve us in so many ways. Here's another example. Brené Brown always talks about in her teachings the story we are telling ourselves in our mind. Essentially, that story becomes our reality. So here's an example to go with it. If you're constantly thinking, for example, that someone doesn't like you because they don't engage in conversation when they happen to see you, they just give you maybe a brief hello and move on, that story can become your reality. But what if the real reason they don't talk to you is because they're socially awkward? Because they don't have the courage to come up and to talk to you. Again, it comes back to the story we are telling ourselves in our mind. Our thoughts create our reality. So what story are you telling yourself to believe? And if we can't get control of our mind, our story, if we can get control of our mind, our story becomes our superpower. And nowhere else could this be more true than in sport. So if you are a high-performance athlete, I'm willing to bet that you have a coach and a mindset coach. Winning the battle in your mind helps you win the battle in sport, whatever the game and whatever the sport. And today, I'm going to zero in on the game of golf. My guest today says 90% of the game of golf is mental, and the remaining 10% of the game of golf is mental. Even if you don't play the game of golf, this conversation is one you are going to want to absorb because the lessons he will share about the mindset coaching he provides some of the world's best players can all be applied to the way we live our life. This is going to be a gold mine for you. His name is Jerry King, and he has dedicated his career to teaching and coaching the game of golf for almost 30 years. He is a member of the PGA of America's Quarter Century Club. He directed Kapalua Resort's golf instruction program, that's in Maui, Hawaii,
from 1995 to 2012 and was instrumental in the creation and overall conception and design of Hawaii's premier state-of-the-art golf training facility, the Kapalua Golf Academy. Under his leadership, the Kapalua Golf Academy was recognized by Golf Magazine in its top 25 golf schools in America. Golf Digest magazine designated Jerry as the top teacher in Hawaii 10 times. And since 2009, Jerry has been recognized as a Golf Magazine top 100 teacher. Following his time at Kapalua Resort, Jerry was on the presidential advisory board for the TaylorMade Adidas. In 2013, Jerry was recruited by Discovery Land Company and now directs golf instruction at several properties, including El Dorado and Chileno Bay in Cabo, Mexico, Gauza Ranch Golf and Lake Club in Idaho, and Driftwood Golf and Ranch Club in Austin, Texas. Jerry has consistently contributed an extensive array of instructional articles to national publications and has been featured countless times on the Golf Channel's Golf Academy Live in Orlando, Florida. I have been lucky enough to take a golf lesson from him. And more recently, he worked with my son, Kasha, in the area of mindset coaching. Kasha absolutely loves the game of golf. He's an avid player and competes in many junior golf tournaments. And while he puts countless hours into practicing and playing the game, he's never had the opportunity to work with a mindset coach until recently. And I will never forget what Kasha said to me when I picked him up following his session with Jerry King. He said, "Mom," and I quote this, "I think my life has just been changed." How's that for impact? With that, friends, it is an honor and a privilege to welcome my friend, the great Jerry King, to the inner circle today. I can't believe I'm sitting across from you right now.
No, thank you, Carrie, and thank you for having me. It's an honor and a privilege.
So you just got back from a pretty special experience in Monaco. Tell me about it.
I did. A wonderful place. We have the Monaco U.S. Celebrity Golf Cup, and our honorary captain is Prince Albert II, and I'm fortunate enough to be captain for Team USA. So we have 12. It's based kind of like the Ryder Cup. So we have 12 U.S. celebrities versus 12 European celebrities. And years ago, Joe Theismann and Thomas Keller, two of my students and friends, had called me up and recruited, wanted me to be captain for Team USA. And then it morphed from there. And we have a lot of great players that have been on the team. Larry Fitzgerald, John Elway, Brett Hull, Doc Rivers, Kenny G. I mean, you know, so many different players in the team. And it's a lot of fun, the camaraderie and the competition. We have a great time, but at the same time, it is a competition. So we have fun going out there and try to, you know, have the cup from Europe. Mm-hmm. It's been going on since 2016. So this year was the fifth year.
But what's it like for you to lead a team like that?
When you have a group of very talented individuals, and I'm not just saying athletes, because let's say if it's like a Kenny G, I mean, Kenny G is a great golfer and you wouldn't think of it, you know, him being the athlete, just to watch him chip in on number 18 to win his match against, you know, a really good player in Europe. The team, to lead that team, it's great because you're trying to bring them together as a team, but then at the same time, teach everyone as a unique individual and coach them as a unique individual so they can contribute the most to the team. And then so then obviously bringing everybody together so we feel like we're as one.
That's a monumental undertaking, but it's also your normal.
It is. And it's fun because it's my passion. And when you're passionate about something, it becomes a lot more natural. That's why I'm a golf professional.
Tell me where that passion began. Like, where did the game of golf come into your life? When, how, where did it all start for you, Jerry?
So, you know, I've been playing golf since I was, I think, 7 or 8 years old. And I was more of a baseball kid, but I played golf throughout. So it was baseball and golf. And I played all the sports because my dad was a big sports guy. And I had my grandfather was a really good golfer. And so I had it all in my family and loved it and was passionate about it. But I never really clicked with golf to say, okay, I'm going to have it as a career. I'm going to make it my mm-hmm. career until I was in college. And then I played constantly, but I was an entrepreneur. So a lot of the people that are in the golf business, like, well, I played competitively all throughout and I played competitively in college. And then I'm going to try professionally. And if not, I'll become a PGA professional and get into the business side of it. Right. Well, I didn't. I was just very passionate about my top two were snow skiing and golf were my two favorites. And so once I graduated college, I said, I'm going to move to Vail, Colorado, because I was born in Colorado and raised in Texas. And I said, I'm getting into the ski business and I'm getting into the golf business because I want to do what I love and love what I do and do it with great people in great places. And I feel very fortunate at the age of 21, 22, that I had that vision. Mm-hmm. I said, that's what I want to do because I wanted to do something that I'm passionate about. And moved to Vail, Colorado and got into the golf business, got into the ski business, decided golf was for me. And then now I just vacation with my two sons skiing every year. You know?
Right. And have a ton of fun doing it. But I want to go back to that statement because I think that's where maybe, correct me if I'm wrong here, the power of your mindset really blossomed because you said, I'm going to quote you, I am going to move to Vail. Not I want to, I am going to. Is that where the whole mindset, create your own reality began for you? Or was it the seed planted years earlier? Because with everything you said that you've done in your life, it was because I am going to do this, not I want. And there's a difference.
Yes, I've had a lot of positive influences throughout my life, you know, be it my mom, be it my dad, be it my grandfather, be it my mentor, golf instruction, Mike Adams, which is kind of once I got into the business. You know, I've always kind of used the statement, you have to see it, believe it, achieve it. And you have to have a vision first. And so once you have that clear vision and you repeat it to yourself, and it's like writing things down, it's like writing your goals down and you see it and then you let it sink in, then you start believing it and then you seek it out and you achieve it. And I did that not only moving to Vail, Colorado, but once I was in Vail, Colorado, I said, I am going to move to Hawaii. And I'm going to, what's the best island? Maui. What's the best resort? Kapalua Resort. So I threw the dart at the dartboard or at the map, and I said, I'm going there. And so putting together my resume, saying it out, well, long story short, 2 weeks later, they called me back and said, will you come to Maui and work at Kapalua? And so I started at the Kapalua Resort, and then I had the vision of building a golf academy. And at the very beginning, they're like, no, you're not. And I said, well, it's my vision, and we're going to, you know, I believe in it. It'll take the resort to the next level if we build a world-class golf academy. So I always called it the full circle project because they told me no to everything. And then they said yes to everything. And I got to build the best golf academy in the state of Hawaii, one of the best in the world. And it was priceless, but it was about that conviction of saying, I have that vision. I see it. I completely believe it. I envision it. And so now let's go and achieve it.
One of the things you said in talking about that experience in Hawaii was you were told no many times. Why didn't no shut you down?
Because I believed. You know, I believed in the vision. And not only just because, and it wasn't a selfish reason because I wanted to build a golf academy. I truly believed that it would benefit the resort and be able to take golf instruction to the next level. Well, what I do as a golf coach every day of my life is I'm trying to make the most positive impact on people's lives through golf. So then if I can build that golf academy for the Kapalua Resort and help grow the game of golf, I'm growing people's lives and making their lives much better because they make golf such a significant part of their life. And you play better golf, you have more fun. Or if it was my tour players, they play better golf, they win more championships, you know, and their career thrives more.
Yeah.
So, and I think to answer your question, it's just that one word, it's that belief. You know, you have that solid vision and you believe in it at every level. And then, you know, hopefully you get all of the tools and the resources and the path to be able to achieve it.
Over the span of your career, would you have any idea how many people you have taught and coached?
You know, I'm dating myself, I've been doing it almost 30 years. So, you know, I have made an impact on thousands of different people. And not only just those people. And if it's, you know, if I'm teaching something to your son, Kasha, and then he communicates it to another kid or to someone else. And then so now we're paying that forward and pushing that positive forward in the form of golf.
Mm-hmm.
And my license plate, I have to say this in Hawaii for 25 years, golf for life.
Oh,
there's such a parallel.
I love it. Okay, I want to talk about that. So many people that you have, you use the word taught and you see yourself as a teacher. So tell me how you approach each player, each person that you interact with that come and say, I need lessons, I need coaching. You're a teacher first, is that correct?
Correct. I'm a teacher first, and then to put the icing on the cake, I'm a coach, you know, because that is more of the longevity of building that relationship and taking them to the next level. I'm not going to keep teaching them the same thing. I'm going to coach them to thrive at different levels. You know, I'll tell you a little short story. So in Hawaii, one of my students, her name was Stephanie Kono, just a wonderful human being. She would fly from Oahu to the island of Maui and come and work with me. And she was one of the top players in Hawaii. And I used to always, you know, it's very important to understand who I'm teaching. How do they learn? Are they visual? Are they auditory? Are they kinesthetic? How do they learn? What are their learning styles? Are they a blend of that? So you have to know that. And then two, you have to care. You have to be able to dive in and care about someone and to really help them reach the next level. Well, Stephanie would fly over. And I've always told my players, the top three clubs in your bag, in some order, better be your putter, your driver, and your wedge. So like when Cashy comes to me, I'm like, what's the best part of your game? And if he says mid-irons, I'm like, okay. I'm like, what's the second best part of your game? Then I'll tell him the story. I'm like, okay, for us to play this game at a high level, it needs to be driver, wedge, putter, putter, wedge, driver. So back to Stephanie Kono, I'd ask her, I called her SK. I'm like, SK, what's the best part of your game? Putting, without hesitation. Without hesitation, putting, because that's how you score. Mm-hmm. And she really believed in herself, and I coached her a foundation to be able to believe in herself more. So fast forward, her dream was and her vision was that she always wanted to go to UCLA. Well, sure enough, she visualized it, she believed in it, and she achieved it. She got a full ride scholarship to UCLA. She ended up becoming number one in the country. She won the national championship 3 years in a row. Wow. As the A player. And she's at UCLA, and I go, Stephanie, what's the best part of your game? Making putts when I have to. That's okay. Taking it to the next level.
It is. There's a difference.
Yeah.
What's the difference?
The difference is that ultimate belief. And so the more that she trained and the more work that she put into that vision, and she instilled more belief, so then she could go out and achieve more. And we always did that. She was always be a good ball striker, but we made it a goal. And we said, you're going to be the best putter in the state of Hawaii. Now let's go from the smaller pond to the bigger, you know, lake or ocean of going to now to the USA, to UCLA. And now take it to the next level of, you know, making putting the best part of her game. And she won national championships because of all the training that we put in with her putting.
How do you teach someone to believe in themselves?
It's a long process. And that's a very good question, because to each her own.
Okay.
You know,
it really individual?
It's individual, because, you know, the old golden rule, right? Do unto others as you've had done unto yourself. Mm-hmm. Well, not everybody's like me. So I have to do unto others as what's best for them.
Oh, wow. This
so
is
you
big.
Have to identify that. Mm-hmm. And so then if I can identify that, then I can also help my players identify it themselves and learn things about themselves and how can they improve on the golf side that can lead to, you know, on the life side, or what do they do on the life side that leads to golf? And it's such a parallel.
You know, what's interesting, and that brings back when I have my lesson with you, and now it all makes sense, because you were asking me so many questions about, Carrie, what was journalism like? What was broadcasting? Dig into that. Do you remember when you had to perform at this? Now, I want you to take that mindset and apply it to golf. So I didn't see at first the parallels, but it's so true. It's like why I had the strength in my career to stand up in front of a room of 1,000 people and it wouldn't faze me. But if I have to hit a golf shot in front of one person, I am imploding inside.
And a lot of people everybody can relate to that. Okay. So the way that I look at that too is that I spend my entire career taking people out of their comfort zones for the right reasons. So you think as a coach and as a teacher, to a degree, at some point I'm making everybody uncomfortable to be able to produce positive change. So you have to, it's not taking a step back to take two steps forward. It's being able to step out of your comfort zone to then be comfortable with that the more times that you pull yourself out of your comfort zone, if it's public speaking or if it's playing in front of people for the first time, you know, in golf. Mm-hmm. And so I love that analogy of bringing that out, you know, public speaking. I mean, people do it. I mean, you start sweating and your hands start shaking and your knees start shaking. And the more times you do it, then you start believing in yourself. It's like, hey, I know what I'm doing. I know what I'm talking about. That is my profession. I'm an expert in that field. And then you can get up and public speak about it because you do it. You believe in yourself. And then you go out and achieve it. But that's a great analogy.
So that is the key, is to push them outside of that comfort zone so that we can feel it. Is that it? And know that it's achievable? Is that, have I made the right analogy? Is that story connected to that?
Yes, 100%. I think the best way that I can convey it is that my MO in coaching and teaching golf is train the dramatic, because we might just be fortunate enough to experience the happy medium. Now, let me explain that. If you're training something dramatic and you're stepping out of your comfort zone, let's say, for example, if I have someone that is, you know, one of our members here, Howard Smith, he has a very compact short swing. And I'm out there going, come on, Howard, let's make the biggest turn. I want your arms to go over your shoulder and feel like you're swinging at 180% length of swing. And then I'll show him on video. He took it from a 40% backswing to a 70% backswing by feeling 140% backswing. Okay. So it's training the dramatic to experience the happy medium. But now he has the fear. So he'll have that fear on the first shot that he gets up to a ball and goes, wow, if I swing all the way back there, I'm going to lose control. Well, that is a fear. So I take him out of his comfort zone. He faces that fear and then realizes it's just a fear. Let's move on past that. I can hit the ball 40 yards further if I make that longer backswing. And so then we have to work through that. Well, here comes the coach now. I'm not teaching him anymore. Now I'm coaching him through that, out of his comfort zone, mm-hmm. to ultimately make it comfortable.
And it all circles back to what you said. It's the mind.
It is.
The skill, of course, you have to have it, but it's that controlling your mind to overcome the fear.
100%. And then that's what I have to do as a coach as well, is like, what are you afraid of? And then kind of dived into that. So then, again, they can learn more about themselves. Or what are we afraid of? It's just golf. When I say just golf, mm-hmm. I mean, it's a passion, and it's a big part of most of our lives, mm-hmm. you know, especially here in Discovery Land Company Club Network. You got to find out, what are you afraid of? What is that fear? Let's face it. Let's work through it, and then work through it again and keep working to where it's out of your comfort zone. Now it's part of your comfort zone.
So I want you to unpack what I mentioned in the intro, and we're going to start to get into some of your powerful lessons. But you said to Kasia, 90% of golf is mental and 10% of golf is mental. Unpack that for us, what it truly means, and really why it's not only applicable to sport, but to life as well.
So, you know, and I say that there's truth in every joke, right? 90% of golf is mental, but 10% is mental, you know? And so I say it that way because once we get a physical foundation and we're training on the range, now it's time to go play. Now let's get out on the golf course. Well, I want to make sure that my players are not going out on the golf course and playing golf swing, thinking about the process and thinking about what we've been working on. So that's the most important part of what I do as an instructor, as a coach, a teacher, is to be able to have my players make that transition from training to now trusting, from practicing to now performing and taking it out on the golf course. I feel blessed to be able to watch the career of Michael Jordan. I've been able to play golf with him several times. Okay. Well, Michael Jordan trained harder than anyone. First in, last out, training. Do you think he was thinking about the technique when he was driving in, you know, to make a game-winning shot? No. It was that belief, and it was the vision of him making the shot and the vision of being able to accomplish what he was setting himself to accomplish. So I want my players to have that mindset. There's a time to train. And then now when it's time to play, it's time to play. And if you haven't spent the time to train it, well, you're only going to trust 5%. Whatever. So 5% better is 5% better. Mm-hmm. I use that analogy to where if you get 5% better today and you're not thinking one part of what we've been working on when you're over the ball and you're playing golf, what if you're 5% better because of the work we put in? Well, theoretically, that's 20 practices, 20 rounds of golf, 100% improvement. Well, that's my Olympic gold medal learner. Right there. But it puts it in perspective of that patience and perseverance of learning how to train it and then learning how to go out and trust it.
But again, that's life.
That it is.
Applies to everything.
100%. That's, you know, it's that delayed gratification. And my two sons, I'm always, hey, if I can make them confident, competent, and independent, I've done a pretty good job. Well, I do that with every one of my players. Mm-hmm. That patience and perseverance, you have to be able to, you know, let's say if you're working out, you're not going to sit there and go do some bench presses and then, whoa, I see my muscles changed in a day. You know, it's that longevity. You have to put the time in to be able to get the results.
Completely. It's all that time. And it's so easy in that process to give up. That's the easy road, mm-hmm. to say, I'm not getting the results I want. but then the commitment or the belief really isn't 100%.
Okay. So what you just said right there, and everybody that's listening, I would love for you, if you have a pen and paper, if you could write this down, okay? You're right. This is the process of change and the process of learning. Okay? You write down a big capital D, and then right next to it to the right, you write a small but capital D. Then you do a lowercase d, and then you write a lowercase b, and then a capital B that's a little bigger, and then a very big capital B. So you have three D's and three B's, okay? That process, that first D right there is denial. The capital B at the very end, what's the opposite of denial? Belief.
Belief.
Okay? So we go through that process, and I've taken so many of my players, be it collegiate players, tour players, weekend golfers, through this process of change. So I can see that developmental process that I want my player to accomplish. Well, it starts off at the beginning. I take them out of their comfort zone. We're making changes. They go straight into denial. Wow, I'm not going to be able to hit the ball like that, or because fear sets in. It's change. They're out of their comfort zone. Well, we take that capital D and we go to the next capital D. We're getting a little bit out of that higher level denial. Then we get to the smaller case D. Now that denial is starting to kind of drift away. And then you get to the first B of belief. It's starting to feel more acceptable. So if you can visualize that home, when we get to that first capital B, it's kind of like 80% of small businesses fail, has been kind of the statistic through the numbers.
Yeah.
Well, you get to that. Now you're starting to get comfortable. So right when you start getting comfortable, you have to think about it and train dramatic and make yourself even more uncomfortable to ultimately achieve that final belief in that capital B at the very end. And then once you go through that, guess what? Let's start a whole nother process to take you to the next level. It's like my player saying, I'm a 12 handicap and I'm going to go down to a 6 handicap. And we surpass that and we've got that player and now she's at a 4 handicap. Well, now, hey, let's get to a plus handicap. Let's go to a plus 2. So now we start a whole nother process to take it to the next level. So you start with the denial. We all go through this as human beings. And to be able to push through to that final belief, it takes that extra effort, commitment, and the work ethic and the patience and perseverance and all these things that we need in life. But if you look at that from the denial to the belief, it's a process we all go through. And your goal is to make it through that so we can start another one and keep growing.
Have you ever thought, I'd love to have a podcast just like this one? Well, I can help. My name is Matt Kundle, and everyone at my company, the Sound Off Podcast Network, had a hand in making this show. Whether it was about the sound, the discoverability, or that you're just enjoying the show, we are all about the detail. If you think you have a podcast in you, reach out to me via email, matt@soundoff.network, or check out the website and become one of the great podcasts we work with at soundoff.network.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
How important in this process is writing things down and maybe a vision board or something like that?
Okay. It is so important and so effective. All right. So my good friend in Hawaii, he owns many, many radio stations. So he used to get really upset with me when I would make this statement, is that 85% of learning is visual. So my radio guy's like, Jerry, don't you say that again. You're over there like, Jerry, this is a podcast. We can't fully see, but let's visualize. Well, 80, whatever that percentage is, it's very significant in visualizing that imagery. So writing things down is visual and kinesthetic. You're using your hand to write it down. You're visualizing. Then you read it again. Read it out loud. Now you have the auditory. Well, those are all the forms of learning, visual, non-visual. We have to put that together. So writing your goals down, I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've had a post-it on my bathroom mirror, and it's like, oh, here's my 1, 2, 3, and I'm a 3 guy. You know, that's why we say 3's a charm, or it's easy, as simple as 1, 2, 3. Mm-hmm. My coaching goes to 1, 2, 3. So when I'm writing things down, I like to simplify. I'm not going to write down 12 goals. I'm not going to write down 12 things I'm going to do. I'm writing down my top three. Once I accomplish those top three, mark those off, write three more down. Because I believe that we tend to overload ourselves and we try to overdo and say, okay, I want to accomplish all these things. So I'm going to write it all down. I compartmentalize with my players. I'm like, let's keep it simple. Let's put down our top three goals. Even in the golf swing, it's three things. I'm not going to let them, you know, more than three things of understanding the setup, the backswing, and the through swing. One, two, three. Understand the Cliff Notes version.
So I love the fact that you talk about you actually put this on your mirror. Mm-hmm. And I know so many people that do that, but I also know many people that'll say that's hokey pokey.
Oh, it's not at all. Remind you. I mean, you're looking at yourself in the mirror and you're looking at that. And then you look at yourself again and you make a commitment to what those goals are. Now, this is just me, but my favorite definition of commitment is doing what you said you were going to do long after the mood you set it in has left you.
That's big.
Because it will. We're all human beings. Doing what you said you're going to do long after the mood you set it in has left you. Mm-hmm. So if you're writing those three things down, you're writing them down because you want to commit to accomplishing those things. So you're seeing it. You believe every bit of yourself that you can accomplish those things, and then you go out and you achieve it.
I want to talk just a quick question about visualization before we unpack some of the lessons that you gave Kasia. Visualization, when I visualize myself doing something, I don't do it wrong. Is that the same for everybody? So if I, like, when I look at it in my mind, I'm like, I close my eyes and I'm like, if I picture whatever it is, a golf swing, delivering a speech, it's always perfect.
Yes. And that is phenomenal. And so you just made me think of, I'm going to tell you a good little story. So throughout the years, I've loved PBS.com. I've gone online and go to PBS. They do these case studies, and Alan Alda, I don't know if he still is, but he was always their spokesperson. And there was this one study that I watched and read about. And so they had two focus groups. All right. So these two focus groups were a mix of professionals and amateurs in their field. One was free throws in basketball, and the other were 10-foot putts of golf. And so they took these two groups and then they broke them up into two subgroups. So one of the groups with the free throws had a ball. The other group did not have a ball. So they're visualizing dribbling the ball, looking up, nothing but net. And they have a technique instructor, someone who's coaching them on the form. Same both groups, right? The group with the ball, the group without the ball. 10-foot putts. They have a mental, a performance coach that's there that's giving them the same mindset, giving the same visualizations, the ones with the ball, the ones without the ball. They did this for 2 weeks. After 2 weeks, they gave them all a ball. Guess which group, which subgroup just destroyed the other group when it came to the competition on how many free throws and how many 10-foot putts they made.
Really?
Take a guess, Carrie, the one without the ball.
Yeah.
They never experienced failure, not one time. So to a degree, your mind, to a degree, doesn't understand the difference between imagined and real. It only understands the information that you feed it. So if you feed it constant, positive, impeccable visualization, you have a much better chance of being able to realize what you're trying to achieve. And so I love that study. I've shared it. I share it every once in a while when I feel like it's going to make an impact on my player, to be able to understand how important that visualization is.
How often should you do it and for how long, like periods of time? Like,
great question. Well, let's say we're talking about golf. And if I'm speaking with Kasia and I'm going, okay, you're playing in a golf tournament tomorrow. We're going to visualize every shot that you're going to play throughout those 18 holes. So you know the strategy. We're going to tee up on the right side of this tee box because all the trouble's on the right. So it's a par four. We're going to tee up on the right side and hit away from the trouble. We're going to play the corners, as I like to say. We're playing to the left center of the green. Now the flag's tucked over on the left. We're not going to go for that flag. We're going to go to the center, to the right center of the green, and be patient. Patience and perseverance. Keep giving yourself opportunity. And you might bring it up here in a little bit, but one of the things I said was you have to respect par. Be patient. So it's all about that visualization. He's not sitting there going, I'm going to birdie every single hole. He's visualizing every shot very patiently throughout the entire course. And so now you've already played. You've already played the round. You've seen yourself play all of these shots.
Wow.
So, and I have my players that are competitive golfers. Mm-hmm. They do it every single time.
Before they play?
Before they play.
Okay.
I mean, you look at Jason Day. You look at Jason Day, what a world-class player, what a world-class guy. And you watch him going through his routine, And why does he get behind the ball and he closes his eyes? Mm. It's part of his routine. He's doing good breathing technique, and he is visualizing the shot in real time.
Okay. In real
time. Let me repeat that. In real time. It's like being able to see a putt. And I see my, you know, some players will sit there and do quick looks to the hole for a 20-foot putt. I'm like, think about the time that it takes for the ball to roll 20 feet. So you have to visualize that putt in real time. It's not just this quick glance and I'm getting my aim and oh, the hole's over there. You have to see the entirety of the putt in real time. Now that's vivid imagery and visualization mm-hmm. of what you want to accomplish. Absolutely. You have to have that in life. You have to have that in golf.
Agreed. So I want to dig into some of the lessons. And when I asked Kasia, you know, and this is a month after what Jerry King, he wrote down everything, by the way, what Jerry King taught you. He can rattle it off so easily. Mm-hmm. And so I asked him about that when he said, like, you changed his life. Some of these lessons that he gave me, I was blown away because they all apply to life. It's not only sport, golf, it's life. So can we unpack some of these? I want to talk about them. And if there's any that you want to add in, please do so. But the first thing he said is, be impeccable to your word. What does that mean?
Well, many years ago, I read the book, The Four Agreements. Okay, the author is Miguel Ruiz, and it's the ancient Toltec wisdom, but so simple. I love how everything comes back. It's so simple. Well, I'm the golf guy, so I apply it to golf. So the first agreement of the four agreements is to be impeccable with your word. Mm-hmm. Don't assume anything. Don't take anything personal, and then always do your best. Mm-hmm. And so the point with golf, and I'm saying that with Kasia, is that everything internal spoken and external must be impeccable. If you hit a bad shot, if you have a negative experience, you don't give it the negative energy like most people do. And then they're calling, oh, I'm a big dummy. I'm a big dummy. I do that all the time. Now that is anti-impeccable. You called yourself a dummy. You've taken it personal. You've made negative comments. So that's definitely not impeccable. And then you say you do this all the time. So you just manifested and told yourself that you do, oh, I always hit it in the water in this hole. So what did your brain just hear? Water on this hole, water on this hole, water on this hole. So I try to teach my players, you have to shift from what you don't want to what you want and only focus on that. Only focus on that. So a good analogy is everybody's thrown darts to a dartboard. All right. So we're throwing darts to this dartboard and you're throwing, you can pretty much, Carrie, don't you think you can hit the dartboard?
Mm-hmm.
If you're throwing,
of course.
Okay, with the dart, you can hit the dartboard.
Yes.
All right. So then I come over and I put the Mona Lisa, a nice Rembrandt, a Ming vase. I put priceless art around this dartboard. And now you're looking at it and fear mm-hmm. strikes in. So now the average person's going to sit there and go, don't hit the Mona Lisa.
Yes.
What does your brain hear? Hit the Mona Lisa. So to be impeccable, what if that wasn't there? You've got to learn to block that out and focus on what you want. Now you're looking at the triple 16, and not only at the triple 16, but you're looking at the upper right corner and there's a little crease in the cork and you just focus on that. You have good breathing and you focus only on that and you throw the dart to that small target. Small aim, small miss, right? My dad taught me that as a young kid shooting a gun. You know, mm-hmm. small aim, small miss. So that is just an example of staying impeccable with mm-hmm. your word, is that you're telling yourself what you want. Smooth tempo, solid contact, right center of the fairway. Tempo, contact, right center of the fairway. And you're programming positive. Okay. You try to drown out all of the noise of the water, of the bunkers, of the Ming vase and, you know, the Mona Lisa. And you eliminate any of the negative and just focus on the positive, what you want.
And that applies to life.
100%. I have two sons. And if I told my youngest, hey, don't hit your big brother. And I'm just using that. They've been best friends. They've never even hit each other. But don't hit your big brother. Yeah. Well, what is the brain here?
Yeah.
You're telling, don't hit your big brother. You're hearing hit the big brother. I wasn't impeccable in my parent coaching. Mm-hmm. You know? So it's always what you want.
Always
you
what
know?
You want.
Keep in your own space. Respect your brother. You know, positive coaching all the time. Life, golf, hockey, basketball. Doesn't matter what the sport is. It's all relative to life. Let's stay impeccable.
Okay. Love it. Another one he said, never assume anything.
Yeah.
But like, this is life over and over and over again, but I'm going to let you unpack it.
Yes. I like stories that illustrate and exemplify.
Beautiful, you know, I do too.
So many years ago at the Coppola Resort, because I was there for 16, 17 years and just had an amazing time with amazing people and had the opportunity to make positive impacts on so many great people. And I'm out playing golf with Michael Jordan. We're partners. We're playing against a bunch of other pros because that's what he did. It was the year that he retired for like the first time. So this was many years ago. Mm-hmm. He's a 6 handicap at this point, and he's even par going into number 16. I'm actually one over, but I'm his partner. So we're kind of going back and forth. So we're both having a pretty, you know, decent round. He gets up on number 16 and cold tops it off the tee. Just short of the water, and it's a tough par 4. And most people, oh, there I go again. Ruined my round. I can't believe I did it. And he, melancholy. He topped it, held the finish, almost act like he meant to do it. And he looked at me. He said, Kinger, I'm going to par this hole. He got back in the cart, drove the 30 yards to his topped ball, gets out a 5-iron, stripes it out in the middle of the fairway. And I just watch his focus and belief take it to the next level. I mean, come on, he's Michael Jordan. Yeah. So he did it in basketball, but golf, that's why he has such a passion for it. Mm-hmm. It's very difficult. You know, and you have to, you know, force yourself to step out of your comfort zone and believe no matter what. So if he would have assumed, oh, I've blown my round, I've blown this hole, I always do this. It's what a lot of people tend to do. Mm-hmm. He said, I am parring this hole. And so he went up and he took control of what he could control, his routine, his breathing, his attitude, and hit great shots. And sure enough, he got there on the green and he had about a 10-footer with a 2-foot break. And canned it right in the middle and came over and gave me a hard fist bump, kind of hurt my hand a little bit, And that was it. And so that perseverance, that resiliency to be able to bounce back, mm-hmm. you know, because he believed and he stayed impeccable and he didn't assume, didn't take it personal, stayed with it.
I mean, never assume anything. That goes back to, I mentioned Brene Brown's teaching, if we're going to relate this to life, never assume that that's what someone is thinking about you or mm-hmm. feeling about you. And it's that story you create in your mind, which 90% of the time, if not more often, it's wrong because we're assuming.
That's right. And then when you assume, it tends to go in and there's a little fear of something. What are they saying about me? And so now you're not being impeccable with your word. So that internal words that you're speaking to yourself,
yes,
not impeccable. So they go together hand in hand.
Okay. You mentioned this one briefly, but unpack this one. Don't take things personally.
Wow, that's a tough one, right? To mm-hmm. not take things personal.
I mean,
well, we're talking golf here. That's my life and that's my passion and that's mm-hmm. what I coach, right? So in golf, we have to focus on the controllables. My godson, 26-year-old professional golfer, he's on the Canadian tour. He's on the Latin American PGA tour. So he's trying to work his way to the Corn Ferry tour and then ultimately on the PGA tour. So, and he's on the right path right now and it's great. And it's one of the big things that we talk about. And, you know, I tend to be kind of helping with life coach and a little bit on the mental side of the game. And but at the same time, it's close to home. So he has a swing coach in Florida. He has a mental coach. And we talk about this all the time. Control only what you can control. Focus on what you can control. And therefore, if you don't achieve the shot, or if you're not taking it personal. Because you can only control what you can control. That's your breathing. It's your mindset. It's the thoughts that are going on, staying impeccable, going through a routine that's consistent, freeing it up, not playing golf swing, being able to trust your athlete and go out and perform. These things that we have in golf that we can control are the things that we can control, not the outcomes, and that's why we can't react. And so if I had a bad shot on number 18, you have to be able to bounce back and be resilient, not take it personal because, hey, I did my best. I controlled all the things that I could control. And then in golf, we call it rub of the green. I got a bad bounce and it went over there and I'm fine. So now I can be resilient and bounce back. So it's something that's there's a depth to it, but I try to keep it really simple. If you control what you can control and only focus on those, you'll have a much better time of not taking things mm-hmm. personal.
Another lesson that Kasia talked about is, did you do your best?
Right. And that's the clincher right there. And I'll use this comparison. So the guys that are in the golf business here, you know, at Gaza Ranch Golf mm-hmm. and Lake Club, when the guys are on the range and they're setting up the range and I'll coach them a little bit, I'll come over and I go, okay, turn around, look at your work, look at that. Are you proud of it? Are you going to walk away and go, I did my best and I had attention to detail and really put care and consideration in what I did? And that, to a degree, it's that simple. Did I do my best? It sounds so simple, but oh, it's so challenging. If it's in parenting, if it's, am I being the best friend that I can be that a friend would want to have right now? You know, am I being the best coach? Am I coaching? Am I really focusing? When I get my player, it's like I have people later and go, Jerry, I said hi to you on the range. You just ignored me. And I'm going, I didn't even hear you because I am so zoned in and 100% doing my best and focused in on this person and giving them every bit of energy that I have. Well, I want my players to do that with every other relationship they have. And if it's a relationship with their golf game, they're going out and they're putting 100% focus on the controllables and flat out walking away from that shot or walking away from that round and asking themselves, did I do my best? And then making mental notes, writing it down, how can I improve?
It's like self-accountability, right?
100%, Carrie. You're spot on.
And that's important to do that with everything we do in life.
Yep.
Check in with ourselves at the end of the day. Did we do our best today? Where could we improve? Because there's always room for improvement. This one I really, really love. And this gets talked about so often in life, but he said, be present. Stay in the present. Talk about that from the golf perspective, why that's so important. Because I've seen it in Kasia. If he's coming down, heading to 18, and he's having the round of his life, his nerves, he just starts to clinch up because he knows this could be a record round.
Mm-hmm.
When he starts off, that first shot in front of a whole bunch of people, he has those nerves. So for you, in your coaching, what do you want people to understand from a golf perspective? What does staying in the present truly mean?
Well, I'll kind of treat this as multifaceted. And I'm gonna go first to what you said about Kasia, like being on the first tee and he has those butterflies. Mm-hmm. So for all of my competitive players, be it through high school and into college, we all experience that. It's those butterflies.
Yeah.
Well, pressure is a privilege. I want my players to look at that because you've put in time to work on your game to be able to get into this situation that is out of your comfort zone and you're feeling that. I want you to take a breath and smile and say, here I am. This is what I've worked towards. And so then now, not only on the first tee to start the tournament, now he's on the first tee in the final group on the final round and he's never been there. And so now I want him to take a breath and smile and say, this is what I want to feel. Don't fight the fear. Don't fight those butterflies. Embrace them and go, that's why I put my work in, so I can be out of my comfort zone, experience this, become better and more comfortable with it, so then I'm more comfortable the next time to achieve at a higher level. So that is the kind of being in the present and saying, now I'm here. You can look back and say, all the work that I put in has got me here, and now I'm going to breathe. And for me, it's 15 seconds. I have other players that go, Jerry, I tend to be social. I'm out on the golf course, you know, and I'm having a hard time focusing. And when I'm over the shot, you know, I've got a lot of thoughts and I'm getting distracted by people. I'm going, well, if you think about it for a second, you have 15 seconds to 20 seconds, 12 seconds, whatever your time is to go through your routine and hit the shot. So through good breathing, when you take that breath and you're standing behind the ball, and you've picked your target, you've got the right club, you've made all of your decisions, you take a deep breath. And as soon as you take that first step forward, I call it the step of commitment. You're now committed to the shot, and you're 100% focused for 15 seconds. We all can do that. And how to stay in the present for that 15 seconds. So I get my players to use that breath and that step as a trigger. And that triggers you into the moment. And you know that you've got 15 seconds. I know that I take 3 breaths as I hit my shot. I don't take longer because it's a pressure shot. It's a golf shot. And so being able to stay in that present moment and know, and you train yourself to do that on the practice range and then to be able to take it out on the golf course. So many players will make a 3-putt. Okay. And then, yes, you're not going to feel that good. Okay. So you need to be able to know how to delete. So I'll give my players a post-shot routine. So if you make a stroke, and you hit it a little too hard, or your stroke was a little too long for that putt, and you've missed it, and it led to a 3-putt, well, I want you to take a practice stroke afterwards. It's a little bit more compact, so you've actually fixed it. Take a breath, move on. So mentally and physically, you've already fixed that shot. So then you're not on the next hole or on the next green thinking about, oh, I've got to go more compact here because I three-putted the last hole. If you're thinking that, you're not in the present. So it's a trained way to be able to use breathing and to be able to use triggers, to be able to move on. You've got 15 seconds to play a shot, and you're in the present 100% because you've trained via triggers on how to get in the moment and stay in the present and not be having your mind on the last hole.
That's what's so, how it relates so much to life is you're not worried about the shot you just did or what is to come, because if you are, you're not in the present.
Correct.
And there's so much talk about in our today's world where we're distracted constantly. Our phones are the number one distraction. Mm-hmm. And I will say it drives me nuts if I'm at dinner and people are constantly looking at their phone. Like, I know that part of that is life and kids and but you can't possibly be engaged in a deep conversation if you're not in the present. And you can't possibly be engaged if you're worried about what happened yesterday or how they what they said about you 2 weeks ago. That's letting that go, and that being in the present is so, it blows my mind when you think about it from that perspective.
Oh, 100%. And again, I love it. Golf for life. There's such a parallel there. And, you know, my boss, he's on the phone constantly. I'm out there coaching him on the golf course. But I've been able to coach him and say, okay, turn the phone face down and have a trigger. So now we're back in the shot. And mm-hmm. it's only going to take us about, let's say, 30 seconds to get from the cart to get to the ball. Take a breath, visualize your shot, and go through your routine. And then the person can still be on the phone call over there. But you have that trigger that you've, now you're in the present for 15 seconds. You're making a commitment to focus that. If it's my son, it's like, Dad, and I'm over here getting a little work done or whatever. And say, can you give me 30 seconds? Can you give me 1 minute? Finish what I'm doing. Have a trigger. Turn that phone, you know, turn the screen to black for a second and go over and then focus 100% mm-hmm. of attention on him.
So good.
Easier said than done.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. We talked already about the power of visualization. That's the other one that he did. Is there anything else that you want to bring into this about big lessons? That were the takeaways when I asked him, just rattled off his tongue without even having to think. It's now ingrained in his mind.
Well, how about I'll go off on a little bit of a relevant tangent here, is that with Kasia, at the beginning, I asked him to not take notes. We're in there. I asked him questions. You know, I'm trying to get him as comfortable as possible. I mean, we're already comfortable with each other, mm-hmm. but it's one of those, it's like, and I asked him, I said, I don't want you to take notes right now, because it was my favorite professor all through my university life was Dr. Kavanaugh. He was my psychology professor. So I got a bachelor's in business, but I got a minor in psychology. I never, you know, realized that I was going to use it as a golf coach, but it really comes in handy. And what he did, we had a class, was an hour and 15 minutes. He would never let it go over 50 minutes, and he would not let us take notes. He wanted us engaging. He wanted us to be looking at him all the time and engaging with him and asking good questions. And he would ask questions. He'd see somebody look down, and, well, nobody can take notes. So then he would ask them questions, and it was always engaging and such a growing learning environment and experience. So that's why I had Kasia, and it's instilled upon me through my career. I don't want my players to take notes during. Now, sometimes my players, they have to. It's just their MO, and I'll let them do it if I'm, okay. you know, to a degree. But I want them to take notes afterwards. I want you to absorb everything. I want you to really engage and be a part of that present time that we're in, because you could be writing down notes and miss something, miss a huge pearl that you could have written down later. Mm-hmm. And so the things that hit home, you take those notes afterwards and then share them with me. Send me an email, send me a text and say, Jerry, these are my notes from today. And I'm like, okay, what about being impeccable? You know, maybe he didn't write that down, or, you know, and then he's like, yes, exactly. And so then now he revisited it again. So that, to me, in me trying to make a positive impact on everybody who's learning here and everybody that I do in my career, is that when you're really learning and trying to grow, to be in the present is huge. Take notes after, review those notes after, and you'll learn a lot more, because you'll stay more present throughout every situation of learning.
Okay, Jerry King, I'm going to take a page out of your book and wrap up this podcast by asking you this. We covered so much powerful information, and there's so many takeaways from this podcast. So if you were listening, now you can go back and take all the notes you want. Top three takeaways that you want people listening to walk away from this podcast. We covered a lot of ground. What are the top three things if someone is trying to improve their game, no matter what the game, or just take their life, their career to the next level. Three takeaways.
I think with what we started, one of the most important things is being able to understand how to see it, believe it, achieve it. So the power of positive visualization, the story that I told about the PBS.com and really being able to visualize what you want. You know, a lot of my players are really good at meditation to be able to quiet your mind and focus on what you want to achieve. So the power of visualization, if it's mapping out your whole round before you go out, or if it's visualizing a free throw, you know, and being able to close your eyes for a second and visualize it in real time. So the number one, I would say, is the power of positive visualization. See it, believe it, you have a much better chance of achieving it.
Okay.
And the second thing, and it starts with being impeccable with your word. It's help Miguel Ruiz with selling some books. If you go get the Four Agreements, it's a life book, but of course I apply it to golf. If you're a hockey player, read it, apply it to hockey. If it's basketball, baseball, if whatever that competitive, it's swimming, whatever that is.
If you're an entrepreneur.
If you're an entrepreneur, it's amazing. And you know, anytime you're dealing with people, because we're dealing with ourselves first to be able to deal with other people. So you have to be impeccable with your word internally spoken before you can be impeccable of having words spoken to other people. Mm-hmm. So those four agreements and being impeccable with your word, internal and external spoken. Very, very important.
Number three?
Number three is be in the moment, is to learn how to be present. And through all of the different tools and some of the things that we shared today, what does that really mean to be in the moment and be present? And it goes to kind of that fourth agreement of always doing your best. Do your best to 100% be present, controlling the things that you can control. Just remember the things that are out of your control. You'll recognize that now, and you'll know exactly what I'm talking about. So focus on what you can control, be in the present, and no matter what, always make the best effort to do your best.
Gosh, I appreciate you. And I love being in your presence to absorb your learnings and your knowledge and your approach to life and sport, and to just see the impact that you've had on countless people I know. And I think that that's one of your superpowers. You have many, is to be able to empower people to see it, believe it, and achieve it. Thank you for the conversation today and for showing up the way that you did and for being so present for this podcast. I'm trying to work in all the listenings. I'm like, did I listen? Did I learn? You're extraordinary, and there's a reason I call you the great Jerry King. Thank you so much for stepping into the inner circle with me today.
Thank you so much, Carrie.
I want to end today by extending my gratitude to you for listening. You know, time is our most precious commodity. We don't have enough of it most days. So I am so grateful that you shared some of your precious time with me. Thank you so much. For show notes and links to our guests and everything we talked about today, you can head to my website, carriedoll.co. That is CarrieDoll.co. Once you're there, you can find links to Instagram and Facebook. You can sign up for my newsletters and get information on my public speaking courses. I want to empower women and people everywhere to use their voice, to invest in themselves, and to be comfortable anytime, anywhere, giving a powerful, unforgettable speech. Come with me. Join the movement of the inner circle. Let's go on this journey together.
A production of the Sound Off Media Company.
I'm Andrea Askowitz.
And I'm Allison Langer. And we are the hosts of Writing Class Radio, a podcast, but we are so much more. We have writing classes. So if you are looking for live online classes where you can join a community, write to a prompt, get feedback, and get better, check out all our classes at writingclassradio.com.
And listen to our podcast wherever you get your podcasts and at writingclassradio.com.